At once Boromir stood up, tall and proud, before them. "Give me leave, Master Elrond," said he, "first to say more of Gondor, for verily from the land of Gondor I am come, and it would be well for all to know what passes there. For few, I deem, know of our deeds, and therefore guess little of their peril, if we should fail at last. Believe not that in the land of Gondor the blood of Numenor is spent, nor all its pride and dignity forgotten. By our valor the wild folk of the East are still restrained, and the terror of Morgul kept at bay, and thus alone are peace and freedom maintained in the lands behind us, bulwark of the West, the Council of Elrond." Welcome to episode 4 of the Grey Company podcast. Recently, we've gotten a number of communiques asking us about the Gondor trait. What do we think of it? How do we make it work? Can it be made to work? So, in this episode, we'll be addressing the armies of Gondor and their role in the Lord of the Rings, the card game. Light the beacons and man the walls, we're headed to Gondor. It's episode 4 of the Grey Company podcast. Happy New Year to you, as this will be our last recording of the 2013 calendar year. We hope the holidays saw your game collections and perhaps your waistlines expand. And also a quick thank you to everyone who has submitted a card idea to our trader contest. You guys are pretty sick, coming up with some stupendously evil cards. That contest is still open, so send your most treacherous hero-turned-traitor card to us via email. That contest remains open until January 1st. This week on the show, we're taking a close look at the Gondor trait. This trait has been around since the core set as it applied to characters like Faramir, Denethor, Elenor, and Gard at the Citadel, as well as events like
For Gondor! For Gondor! For Gondor! For Gondor!
It never saw much development in the Shadow of Mirkwood or Dwaradel cycles, but was one of the focuses of the Against the Shadow cycle, as the whole quest line was set in Gondor. Today, we'll see if the cycle met the expectations we had for the trait, and just how playable Gondor is. We'll have our salute to the conclusion of the Against the Shadow cycle as well, and look at our most and least favorite cards. But before we get to all of that, let's check in with the rest of the gang. Dan, how has the holiday been treating you?
Quite well, thank you. And fortunately, before all of my travels for the holidays, I managed to finish making four solo or multiplayer monosphere Gondor decks. So that's one of the things I'm going to be talking about today.
Cool. Were they, well, without spoiling too much, were they very successful?
Some of them, yeah, very much so, and others are still kind of rough.
Nice. Yeah, Ian and I got a game in yesterday, and I played a tactics leadership Gondor deck, and it worked okay. But before we get to that, Ian, what have you been up to?
Got to see the new Hobbit film, of course, and been tackling the nightmare scenarios and using my free time to try to organize my collection.
Matthew, how about you? Have you been organizing your cards as well?
I have not. I still need to see the Hobbit movie, actually, so no spoilers, yeah, please. not that I don't know what happens in the book, but what else? I got the new Nightmare Season 3 as well, so thanks to my local game store. And I actually didn't do a darn thing on the holidays. I was home alone, so nice. I'm well rested.
So burglars didn't try to break into your house, did they? And you had to set up a bunch of traps because you were home alone?
Yeah, no burglars. No burglar Baggins.
That's good.
Be prepared, Matthew, because Bilbo actually dies in the second Hobbit.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, no.
No. All right, well, that's neither here nor there, because today we're talking Gondor. So before we get to anything else, let's talk for a minute about expectations. You know, we all got into this game. We all had in mind our own versions of the armies of Gondor, like we'd seen in the films or visualized from the books. So from the core set onward, what were some expectations that you guys maybe had for the Gondor trait or things you would have liked to have seen from a Gondor trait set?
That's a really interesting question, and it's actually something I posted in the FFG forums a while back. It actually looks like the beginning of August. And the reason I think expectations were a bit off for the Gondor trait, at least from my perspective, comes from something Caleb said in the Steward Sphere announcement article. And I'll just sort of quote a little bit here, which said, "This leads us to one of our other design goals for this cycle, to give players the cards they need to build strong Gondor decks. In the same way that the Dwarrodelph cycle focused around dwarves, the player cards in the Against the Shadow cycle center around Gondor and her allies. Each of the other traits in the game receives some attention, but most of the player cards are meant to bolster the Gondor trait. So I'm a number sort of guy. If you ever listen to the Progression Series card reviews, I often cited a lot of numbers. And so I was like, most of the cards meant to bolster the Gondor trait? Because I'm of the opinion that Gondor's not all that strong, at least not as compared to dwarves from the Dwarrodelph cycle. And so there's a total of 78 player cards in this cycle. To me, most means more than half. And so that would be 39 cards. There's only 34 cards that mention Gondor in some way, and that's player cards. So some of them, it's just a trait. They just have the Gondor trait, but they actually don't synergize with Gondor at all. They might be a monosphere card, like the White Tower Watchman, or something like that. There are very few events or attachments that deal with Outlands. I'm sorry, I was looking at the Sword of Morthod when I said that. Very few that actually deal with Gondor as a trait. It's just a bunch of allies that may or may not work well together. So going with what Caleb said, that most of the cards are meant to bolster the Gondor trait, I'd have to say that I think that this cycle falls flat, but that's certainly something that we can flesh out a bit, I'm sure, in our discussion today.
Yeah.
Gondor in the books, which is this kind of bulwark against Mordor. I was really expecting them to be a strong defensive force. And I think we did get that to a certain extent, at least just looking at Baragond and Gondorian Shield, which I'm sure will pop up again in our conversation. But that aspect was fleshed out. I think I was expecting, which I think may have been unrealistic, to see Gondor kind of reach a dwarfish level, yeah. Which I don't think happened. But I think at least in the defensive aspect, we saw some of my expectations met, I would say.
Yeah, one thing for me, as far as expectations, Steward of Gondor is such a staple in this game. And so having that be one of the first things when you open the core set and you see that and you realize that was the way to really build a deck that had any kind of a resource ramp for much of the game, and only until more recently did you have other options for resources. So it kind of set my expectations very high for Gondor, because that card is so powerful, probably even too powerful. And one other card that I would say set expectations early was Prince Imrahil. I've always really liked that character, even though he's kind of a minor character in the books, and I was hoping to see a kind of a theme of, like, you know, when leaves play or whatever, kind of around him. And it's interesting that it's gone a completely opposite direction, really.
Yeah.
So, it's just different sets of expectations. And I also agree with the defensive thing, and so it's nice to see Baragond. But, it's been kind of interesting where Gondor, we've been given the rope-a-dope in terms of what to expect and what we've gotten.
Right, because before Against the Shadow, really the only Gondor cards we had were, like you mentioned, the Steward of Gondor and the other cards in the core set. And then between the core set and Heirs of Numenor, the only Gondor cards we saw, if I'm not mistaken, were Imrahil, Tactics Boromir, and Warden of Healing. So it was those are great cards, but it was really just underdeveloped as a trait. And so, as you say, we kind of had just bits and pieces of potential directions that they went in. And then we get to Heirs of Numenor and the Against the Shadow cycle. And as Matthew said, we have this expectation that we're going to have these big Gondorian armies and these great Gondor decks that are going to be comparable to the dwarves, which is really what I was expecting. I was expecting to field just a massive army of Gondorian soldiers and, like, plate armor ready to go, like, march down the walls of Mordor. But let's talk about that for a second. What does Gondor actually become with this cycle?
I don't know. I think it's a hodgepodge. I wrote out a list of all the cards that relate to Gondor in some way from this cycle. And I'm seeing things like Ithilien Tracker, the Hunter of Lamadon, Anborn, Kaldara, Emry. These aren't cards that work together. They're simply cards that happen to have the Gondor trait. Master of Lore, for example. Dan, you have the expression glue cards, which I really like. We got, 34 Gondor cards in the cycle, but we got very few cards that I would consider glue cards, cards that would bind together the Gondor trait in a way that it can work, whether it's resource acceleration, card draw, you know, Gondor dudes synergizing with other Gondor dudes. And so, in some senses, I'm not sure we got anything consistent or coherent for the trait, even if there are, you know, 30-some allies, you know, that or other sort of attachments or events that mention Gondor.
There are a few cards. I mean, I for the most part, I agree with you, but I think there are a few cards that do work quite well. I think Wealth of Gondor is actually a really good event, and it definitely obviously synergizes, especially if you can kind of splash it. In a, you know, it essentially can allow you to accelerate resources on non-leadership heroes, assuming you're not running Monosphere. There's a few others, but yeah, I definitely agree. There's not a lot of glue, which makes it really hard, and it's one of the things when I went through the process of making four Monosphere Gondor decks, you notice those gaps without the cards that fill it very well. Yeah. You end up having to put non-Gondor stuff in there to be your glue cards, which is kind of strange.
Yeah, I'm really wondering whether it was intentional. I mean, I know obviously they're intentionally designing these things, but I'm wondering if the intention, I'm wondering if the intention is for Gondor to be this kind of hodgepodge, like balance can do everything type of trait, which if it's the case is it's going to need a lot more development in the future because what we have is kind of just stubs that can be developed later. But I imagine that's probably not going to happen until the Return of the King saga expansions, which is, you know, I could be wrong, but that's a couple of years down the road. And I think the thing with Gondor, it just doesn't feel as distinctive as the other traits. Like, if you ask me what is Rohan, it's like questing and staging area attack. If you ask me what dwarves do, well, they swarm and they buff each other and they do card draw. But if you ask me what does Gondor do, I'm kind of going to answer like Matthew and Dan did, which is, you know, it's going to take me a paragraph or two to describe.
Yeah.
It's not very distinctive.
It is all over the place. And that was something I was thinking about, just kind of, you know, I always want to have these apologetic, thematic opinions. But, you know, maybe Outlands are supposed to be these big armies that I really wanted to see. And maybe all the like weirdos like the custodian, the Citadel custodian, and the Pelargir people are kind of there to represent the different small parts of Gondor, but that's not cool. Like, nobody wants to have an army and like, oh, there's the custodian, he's gonna like mop up after all the orcs get killed or something. So I don't know. So yeah, you're spot on. It's lacking a clear identity. You kind of, the only thing to me that's clearly defined are the Rangers. So have you guys had much success with the Rangers as an archetype?
Yes to the Ranger question. I guess I will take up the apologist torch though for just a second.
And sure, say, yeah, of course.
There is one sub theme other than Rangers that I think has started to come out, and it's funny that they waited until the last AP to really give it to you. And that is this idea of having extra resources around. Boromir, obviously out of the Heirs of Numenor box, you saw that with him. It's like, yeah, he's going to buff all your Gondor allies if you leave a resource. But in and of itself, you kind of looked at that and you're like, yeah, you build a deck around that. You don't have enough willpower. So you end up having to do Aragorn and like Sword That Was Broken, or you do Rohan to get the willpower. You end up having to do these kind of hybrid decks to be able to work around that. And finally, in the very last AP, they give you Visionary Leadership, which is an amazing card. And then boom, the whole Boromir as General of Gondor's armies archetype, like overnight, springs into being. And it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of unfortunate, I think, that they waited until the last AP to do that, because if it had come out, say, in Steward's Fear, it would have been, oh, okay, now I see where you're kind of pushing this leadership Gondor, you know, archetype.
I think, too, maybe dwarves just kind of ruined everything, because dwarves were, everything kind of came together really smoothly, and they had so many different ways of triggering different effects and things like that. Where I see what you're saying, because you have, because that was my thought from the get-go, was Boromir is going to be the champion of Gondor. But it didn't really come out, as you say, until this last pack. But at the same time, it was a little underwhelming for me, because the dwarves fit together so snugly and were super powerful. Because if you think about, you know, somebody like Erebor Battlemaster, the more dwarves, more hit power, and it's, you know, knocks it out of the park. So maybe dwarves were too powerful and they didn't want Gondor to be that way, or maybe they wanted to create more of a niche for it. I don't know.
I think you're absolutely right. It's Now, Dwarves certainly had the advantage of the two Hobbit saga expansions. Not that they weren't good before
true,
that
yeah.
with just Khazad Dûm and the Dwar Elf cycle. They were still good, certainly. But I think having two saga expansions that were almost primarily Dwarves, certainly from the hero standpoint, I think was a benefit to them.
Yeah.
But even without the Hobbit saga expansions, or even with them, you're right that they fill a particular... Oh, just as Ian said, when you think of Dwarves in this game... You can sort of define what they do. Even elves, to some degree, even though they haven't been fleshed out all that much. But Gondor, again, it's just sort of a hodgepodge. So I think, back to your expectations question, it's not so much that I think the cycle as a whole was a disappointment. I think coming fresh off the Dwarf cycle and the two Hobbit sagas, we had this expectation that by the end of the cycle, Gondor would be this sort of mighty, massive trait that could hold its own against dwarf decks, and frankly, I just don't think that that happened. So, are dwarves overpowered? Maybe, maybe not, but they set expectations for how right. every other trait will synergize, and I think that's sort of why Gondor seems so lacking to me at this point.
Well, you mentioned the Hobbit expansions and the heroes that came with that. Let's talk about the Gondorian heroes for a second before we kind of branch off and talk about what we've been able to do with the Gondor pool as it is. What do we think of the current stable of Gondorian heroes available to us?
Well, Baragon's my favorite, but I can put him in any deck. It has nothing to do with him being Gondor and everything to do with him being a fantastic defender. But, you know, but he's good. I even like the leadership Boromir, even though I know a lot of people prefer tactics. But I certainly like the two from Heirs of Numenor.
For me, Baragon alone kind of justifies the whole cycle.
Right, yeah, totally.
Just Baragon on Gondorian Shield is so useful, and it just, like, when I'm controlling that character, I feel like I'm controlling Gondor, just, like, taking on that role of, okay, I'll block everything on the board, I don't care what you throw at me, and so that really represents that. I think when I'm building Gondor decks, the issue is not so much the individual heroes. I think there's some good heroes in there. It's just they don't necessarily work together. Their effects aren't necessarily designed to work together. And so they kind of almost fit better with heroes from other traits a lot of times.
Yeah, and it makes me think about Derek's comment about, you know, being a theme apologist is, you know, when you think about the books, Gondor, while they are, you know, the bulwark of the West or whatever other phrase you want to use, it's, you know, their true power comes from when they, you know, at least with Rohan, when they interact with the other factions. So, I mean, I guess maybe in a sense that was intentional. I don't know, but it definitely, I agree with everyone else's assessment that on their own, I mean, even just looking at the Gondor heroes like Caldera, she's actually really underrated as a hero in terms of her stat and her stats, and even if you don't end up using her ability, she can work out in a fair number of decks, as I've found more recently, but there's not even three spirit Gondor heroes, so I mean, if you wanted to go with a Gondor, you know, straight Gondor spirit deck, which ends up being, by the way, a pretty good deck, you can't even do that. So, and there's nothing particularly Gondor about her, which is another thing that's weird and really echoes what Matthew said, is that, you know, you've got this collection of heroes that don't really work together, and even in factions like Noldor that only have, you know, have half as many heroes, you have things like Eladin and Elrohir where it's really obvious they work together and you play them together and you can make powerful decks. It's kind of strange that Gondor doesn't have that.
And the big thing I will say, too, is I guess the biggest issue I have with the Gondor heroes is none of them have more than two willpower.
Yeah.
And especially when you're building just a pure solo deck, just playing with one deck, you really need to have strong starting willpower. And when you have to devote two heroes to get, say, four willpower starting, it's just not a good position to be in. Yeah, you can get visionary leadership later on, but that's the whole issue. You need it from that very first round. So I'm hoping we'll get a Gondor hero with like three willpower popping in the future.
Yeah, that is a very, very good point, is that a lot of their stuff, because it's a lot of global boosts, they have a real, Gondor as a trait seems to have a real problem in the early game, because Steward of Gondor hasn't gotten online yet, and a lot of the other global stuff, you know, it just, the value of, you know, really all their different global effects doesn't truly kick in until mid-game.
I mean, even Hobbits from the Black Riders. One teeny tiny saga expansion, and Hobbits are a pretty good deck. I hate to admit it, because I don't want to play Hobbits, but they are. Right now, granted, we have Fast Hitch, and there's a few other Hobbitish sort of cards from previous cycles, but one saga expansion, and you can make a really good Hobbit deck. Yeah. Certainly when we were at Gen Con, Ian, I think, was running a Hobbit deck, and it was really good. Gondor, we've had a deluxe expansion and a whole cycle, and maybe I'm wrong, and that's entirely possible, but I don't think there's a deck that can compare to a Hobbit sort of deck, or again, a Dwarven deck or something. So, again, I hate to be so down on Gondor, but I think it's because expectations were set at such a level that it will be difficult for other traits, perhaps, to meet the bar that the dwarves raised, and now that the hobbits have raised. And, you know, if you sort of peruse the forums, it seems like a lot of people are theme players. They want to build a Gondor or a Rohan or a dwarf or a hobbit. I'm not that way. I just sort of put together whatever I think works. But a lot of people are theme players, and I can appreciate it and I understand it. And so I think a lot of people might walk away from this cycle being somewhat underwhelmed.
Well, let's jump to that. So we see the Gondor trait as it stands now. Maybe underwhelming. Actually, no, maybe. It is underwhelming. But based on the cards that we have now, what are some ways we can make it work? Or what are some viable Gondor decks that maybe you guys have constructed, or even ideas that you've had for good Gondor decks?
Honestly, the only one I've ever made was for the Progression Series, and it's because I wanted to try it, because, you know, in the Progression Series, I was always pushing Mitch, or just us as a team, to create different decks, and it didn't always work, but I did it against Encounter at Aemon Din, because I knew, it was like, well, we're not going to lose this scenario, it's far too easy, so I can make a substandard Gondor deck, and we'll still win. So, I think I had Imrahil, probably Leadership Boromir, and maybe Baragond as my third hero. I honestly don't remember. But that's my only experience trying to make a Gondor deck. And against Encounter and Aemon Din, I did okay. But that's a quest that almost no one should lose in a two-player game. So, with that said, you guys sound like you have a lot more experience with Gondor decks. So I'm curious to see how they turned out.
What I will say is, so that I don't sound completely down on Gondor, because I have some measure of hope, which I think it's much better in multiplayer than solo. Because Gondor is much better in combat, I would say, in general, so it can take on that role of let me just defend everything for everyone, which I think we've seen a lot in our games, with usually at least one of us is running Baragond and just taking on everything. And also the resource generation, just that combo of Steward of Gondor and some Eren Riders, and being able to just kind of spread those resources out among players, so... Those two aspects in multiplayer work really well. One deck that I was kind of experimenting with was Leadership Boromir, Baragond, and Legolas. So I made a thematic concession here, which I think is what you have to do with Gondor right now. And just basically focus on what it's good at. Obviously, that's a multiplayer deck, and it's all about just defending, attacking strong with Gondorian fire, and putting a bunch of resources on Leadership Boromir, and... you know, just handling the combat and funneling out the resources to the other players.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, you're exactly right. I think, Dan, you mentioned this too, just the importance of resources for Gondor, because now thinking back on it, when you and I played yesterday, Ian, you had the questing down, and then with my Gondor deck, I had the defense and the attack down. And it really comes down to resources, because I could shuffle things around with Errand Rider, as you say, but also having Gondorian Fire on Boromir plus Steward of Gondor, I stacked up like 13 resources, and that's partly because I had no card draw because I slapped the deck together kind of quickly, but like a 13 or 16, whatever, attack from Boromir can take out a boss in no time. So I guess focusing on resource generation and attacking is the way to go for Gondor. But how about you, Dan? I know you took a monosphere approach. So how did that go?
Yeah, just really because the cycle kind of pushes you in that direction. There's so many, and one of the things, when Matthew was talking about the breakdown, one of the reasons why there was less Gondor synergy, I think, is because they had kind of simultaneous goals in this cycle. One was, you know, yeah, Gondor's a good thing, but also we want to push people to these monosphere decks, which, like the Gondor thing, I think is kind of hit and miss. I mean, some of the monosphere cards are really good, and some of them not as much. But, yeah, it's interesting. It's some of the mono decks
worked out really well, better than I thought. And some of them, like the tactics one, is still just, I mean, I have to like kind of cherry pick scenarios that it can even beat. And it just struggles with willpower and the same, kind of the same issues that every tactics deck, you know, has as far as a starting threat. I mean, I even included Mary in that one to try and give it a lower starting threat. And yeah, it's just, you end up having to do these hybrid decks because there's not enough tactics, Gondor heroes. So it has Hama and it ends up doing some of the Hama, you know, trickery. And on the one hand, that would feel like cheating. But on the other hand, if you don't do that in the deck's just not good enough to even, you know, like if you've got your tier one and your tier two, if you don't include some stronger non-Gondor stuff in there, it's not even a tier two deck, really.
Yeah.
In my testing. But yeah, it's one thing that I think was pleasantly surprising about the mono approach was, the all spirit deck. I mean, granted, it had Spirit Glorfindel, but that was just kind of, you know, Ian's comment is very, very true about the starting willpower on Gondor heroes. It's a real impediment to making good decks. And so I had to have, it would have been either Eowyn or Spirit Glorfindel to really offset that. But that said, the deck ended up being amazing because Pelargir Shipwright, which is, I'll admit, a card that I didn't think much of when I first saw it, is actually a fantastic card. You know, three resources for a three willpower ally with, you know, one attack, one defense, three hit points. It's just a great ally for a mono deck. So that was kind of a pleasant surprise, is playing that deck and against a couple different scenarios and just absolutely crushing them. It's a very, very solid deck because Elanor gives you that, you know, between your Test of Will and your Map of Yirnil, you're bringing back whatever, you know, powerful spirit events you need, and then Elanor gives you that extra layer of protection, so you're basically immune to treacheries in that deck. And then on top of that, once you get a couple of the shipwrights out, you've got a lot of willpower, so you really just, you know, you've got two of the main facets of the game just locked down. You're not really worried about locations either, and the only real weakness there would be combat, but you can essentially just kind of flood the board and do a, you know, numerical superiority kind of approach. So, and obviously if you paired that with the leadership Boromir, it would, you know, the combat starts to really get improved as well. So yeah, it's a solid deck, which was a nice surprise.
And not to mention the visionary leadership, you add an extra one willpower to those shipwrights.
Oh yeah.
Questing for four apiece. That's right. Pretty sweet. Which begs the question, did you guys have any luck, or have you tried a Rohan-Gondor deck combo?
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up, because ever since Mutual Accord came out, it's kind of intrigued me, and I think there's definitely the potential there. I haven't done a ton to try to make it work. I do think they can work together, just from the aspect of Rohan kind of covering the questing portion and Gondor covering the combat area. But from the limited use I've made of Mutual Accord, I find I always end up cutting it for other things.
Yeah.
And just finding that those situations don't crop up as much as I expect them to, where that card would come in handy. I don't know what your guys' experience have been.
We'll have to make an experiment of it, because there's such a great potential for it, but it's so specific. Because I always have in my mind, like, yeah, I'm going to knock out Mutual Accord, and then I'm going to pull for Gondor, and then all the global effects are going to kick in, and then we'll do, like, We Do Not Sleep, and it's just going to be this massive push, and we're going to save the day. But there's so much setup involved, it's kind of kind of hard to pull off.
Yeah, it's one of those win more cards where things are already going well, then this just adds icing to the cake. But in and of itself, I don't think it's going to get you out a whole lot of pinches. You
know? Yeah.
My experience has been identical to yours, Ian, and I think one of the things that we said earlier is exactly why. It's either a win more card, or it actually doesn't really work at all, and that is because Gondor isn't quite focused enough. You're not really sure what, like, there's one half of the equation that we can really succinctly say what it's going to do, right? On the Gondor characters gaining Rohan, you know it's going to be, you know, not exhausting the quest, or like I've always wanted to do a combo around Eomund where, you know, if all your characters are Rohan and Gondor and you do Mutual Accord, then Eomund dying, everybody readies, and that can be pretty cool.
Right.
But even so, it's really, you know, the lack of focus on Gondor makes it hard, because what are you actually gaining from having those Rohan characters gain the Gondor trait? It's not really clear. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they're gaining some extra attack from Boromir, maybe they're gaining some extra willpower, but depending on where you are in the scenario, it's a question mark of whether that's going to even benefit you, right?
And so, I'm sure I'm sure that that's a card that in the current cycle, maybe, the voice of Isengard's, or whatever, I don't even know what the cycle's called, but whatever, the Ringmaker cycle, maybe, you know, Rohan will be more developed, but how will it be developed? Will it be developed like Gondor was, which is not all that well, or will it be developed like the dwarves? So, yeah. I'm sure that it's probably not a coincidence that we had Gondor and then Rohan, and they do work together, and perhaps Mutual Accord is one of those cards that it looks pretty crappy now, but when we do our wrap-up episode for the next cycle, perhaps we'll be singing a different tune.
Hopefully, because I have a lot of hope for cards like Fourth Aerolingus, because if you've got, you know, Boromir or Imrahil kind of powerful Gondor heroes being able to attack in the staging area, there's some potential there, but who can say?
And certainly with, you know, the Helms, whatever the saga expansion for Helm's Deep covering that portion of the book, I would imagine that we'll get a Rohan card or two there as well. Yeah.
There is one other thing that is worth mentioning, and it's good that you mentioned the Fourth Aerolingus thing, Derek, is that this game is different than the other LCGs in terms of how attachments work. Mm-hmm. You only check to meet the requirements of an attachment when you're playing it, and once the attachment's on, it's pretty much going to stay. So you can do Mutual Accord, stick something like a Spear of the Mark onto Boromir. I mean, if for some reason he was going to be attacking to the staging area. Even though it's at the end of the phase, it's gonna round or however long that event lasts, it's gonna go away. It doesn't matter. The attachment will stay. So as we get more of these Rohan exclusive weapons, which we know we're gonna get more of those, that might become actually a useful thing about it is, oh yeah, suddenly, you know, all my Gondor heroes are taking up a bunch of, you know, weapons of the Rohirrim and going to war, and, you know, there might be some cool combos you can do out of that. We'll see.
Right. Or even putting a Gondorian shield on a Rohan guy, if he gets that trait, might be a lifesaver for around that one extra defense, but right. Who can say? Well, we're going to move on to our salute to the Against the Shadow cycle, but before we do, I want to encourage you guys listening to pop onto our Facebook page, which recently passed the 100 likes mark, proud to say. Thanks to Matthew on that one for sharing some Nightmare Mode cards. but get over there and talk about... any improvements you maybe would have liked to have seen to the Gondor trait? That's something we didn't get to talk about on here, but that would make for an interesting discussion. So if you have any ideas about how we could improve Gondor, talk about it on Facebook. So let's go to our Against the Shadow wrap-up, and we're going to talk about our favorite cards of the cycle and perhaps our most disappointing cards of the cycle. Do we have a volunteer to go first into the ring?
My favorite was a very easy pick, and that was, because we're not counting Heirs of Numenor, I suppose, because if we were, I'd probably pick Viragon. But just with the six APs, my favorite card is one that someone mentioned earlier, and that's the Gondorian Shield.
That card sucks. Why would you pick
that? No, that card, with my favorite hero, Viragon, it's a fantastic card. No, I mean, with enemies just getting beefier and beefier, Viragon having Sentinel, just being able to defend for six right off the bat, you know, and Viragon gets to play it for free, you know, I think it's just a fantastic, fantastic card. I think that card, along with Viragon, has made the cycle for me. Yeah. So, yeah, I love those two.
You'll get no argument from me.
Yeah, it's the example that you gave of, you know, that, I mean, it works on other heroes as well, but yeah, the Viragon plus Shield is the first time in the game that you can have a consistent strategy for actually blocking a lot of the boss enemies, which is cool.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right, Dan, what's your favorite?
For me, it was Anborn. It's, you know, one of those minor characters in the books, but I really like the way, like, everything in terms of the mechanics of the card, the design of the card. It's funny that I end up using him for his stats more often than his ability. The three attack and the lore sphere is really kind of huge, because lore is kind of lacking in that regard, typically. But and the ability's nice. I mean, I use it every once in a while, but yeah, just the one willpower, three attack... just great, great card.
Yeah, and if, you know, we're talking about all this comboing. If you get Boromir in play, you get a four attack ally. That's pretty crazy.
Right, especially for the lore sphere.
Yeah. All right, Ian, cough it up. What's your favorite?
This choice kind of surprised me. It's not definitely not the most powerful card of the cycle. It's mostly a card I picked for fun factor and the theme, which is Fourth Aerolingus, which just came out. And the reason I like it is just this idea behind it of all these Rohan heroes just charging the staging area and laying waste to everything there. Mm-hmm. And I have gotten it to work in, you know, Rohan heavy decks and recycling it with Hama so you can keep using it over and over, and it works pretty well. But I think it's going to get even better with probably the bevy of new Rohan cards, which are going to come out soon. So that's my pick.
Nice. And I'll back you up on the thematic choice too, because that's my favorite and my most disappointing, both kind of necessitate a thematic explanation, because my favorite card I picked was Forest Patrol. And this is not my favorite card mechanically. I don't even use it that much, but just what it represents is really cool to me, because as we discussed, we got the Rangers of the South and the Lore Sphere. And those are some super cool characters, and thematically, they're some of my favorites. And so the idea of, you know, the Rangers being out there in Athelion and some orc stepping into a trap, and then he's kind of stuck there, and then a forest patrol pops by and just fills him full of arrows. To me, that was really cool, even though mechanically I didn't make it work as often as I would have liked. So Forest Patrol is definitely my favorite.
Nice.
And I'll go ahead and follow that up with my most disappointing, which was Pelargir Ship Captain. And again, not a terrible card. It's a little redundant with the Envoy, but he has a cool ability. He's a decent ally. But thematically, and I think I made this comment on your blog, Ian, he's such a letdown. It's like a guy with a turban, like on a boat, and it just kind of represented that capstone of the cycle. And the expectations that I had for it. Like I said before, I was hoping to see these massive armies of dudes in plate mail ready to go face the enemy. But instead, we got custodians and people building ships and, you know, things like that. So it's not a bad card mechanically, but just thematically, to me, it was definitely a huge disappointment.
Yeah, it's all about, for you, what they would have put in his place, right?
Exactly, like yeah.
Right. Yeah, I think it's interesting how they went with this whole craftsman of Minas Tirith approach. Like, we got lamprights and shipwrights, and instead of the soldier aspect. So,
who can say? Matthew, what was your most disappointing card?
Well, you know, this was a tough choice for me, because I'll fully admit that of the three cycles we've had so far, this is my least favorite. So choosing my least favorite of the least favorite was difficult. on top of that, I will say that this is a card I haven't yet tried, partly because it's brand new, and partly because, well, I have no interest in trying it. But Theoden, our latest hero, would be my most disappointing card. While tactics certainly needs extra willpower, I'm not so sure you ever really want to be questing with your tactics heroes.
Bingo.
And as someone who plays tactics a lot, now granted, again, I'm not a solo player anymore, and so a lot of people on the forums or on various message boards really like him in solo play. I'm mystified by that, to be honest. I'm yet to be convinced. But in multiplayer, I'm doing Baragon, I'm doing Legolas, people like that. These are heroes who shouldn't be questing. Right, they should be doing sentinel defenses or ranged attacks or what have you. And so I'm just a little bit miffed by his ability. Maybe it's okay in the early game and then becomes useless in the late game. I really don't know. It's just when I think of, again, not really a thematic player, but when I think of Theoden and his role in the books, I think he fits naturally as a tactics hero, but this is not the ability I would have given him. So mm-hmm. To me, most disappointing of the cycle.
And I can back you up, by the way, Matthew. I have played him in quite a few decks, and certainly solo, he's just not, it's just the solution in search of a problem. It's really, he doesn't work. And I could see, and people have made arguments in the forums and elsewhere, that multiplayer he can work, and I will grant that in the right collection of decks. But yeah, solo, he's just, it's exactly what you said. If you just go through and look at the tactics heroes that you would be questing with him and getting the bonus from him, the whole design of those cards is that's not the facet of the game they're supposed to be participating in.
Right. I feel like if you're questing with tactics heroes, you're losing. And it's not a good place to be in, except for Thalon, right? But it does, you know, if you're having to pull out your tactics heroes, oh God, we need more willpower. Who, you're zero Baragon? You know what I mean? So, again, like I said, if you're questing with tactics heroes, you're probably losing. And so, again, he might be a hint of the cycle to come. Maybe we'll see some cool tactics heroes that might actually be okay when questing. I don't know, and so we might be reevaluating him soon, but where the game sits now, you know, not my fave. Though I love the art, I will say that.
Yeah. I just don't get the theme behind that card. Like, I don't get why Bard the Bowman or Legolas cares if Theoden is around, you know? based on the book, he was a very inspirational leader to Rohan people, of course. I could see a Rohan buff, but I don't see why just your average warrior from some other part of the world really cares if Theoden's there or not.
Yeah, I suspect it was a mechanical choice, because I completely exactly. agree. If you just replace Tactics Hero with, like, Rohan Hero, he'd be awesome. You could make all sorts of multicolor Rohan decks around that and really, you know, play, and it would make so much thematic sense, but I think they're worried that, like, oh, Eowyn questing for five is, you know, too powerful or whatever.
And then he's Sentinel, which...
Yeah, so random. Quest with me, but then I won't be able to block.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, well, we'll leave Theoden King alone for now. Dan, who was your biggest disappointment? Or
for
what,
me,
I should say.
It was Pippin, the spirit version of Pippin. And I'm not even... Like, hobbits are not even my favorite archetype, per se. It's just, to me, this was such a whiff in terms of having potential to take things a different direction, especially right before the Black Riders expansion came out. They could have used this opportunity to say, hey, here's an alternate archetype, because obviously the Black Riders is giving you the whole hide-and-seek, is what I like to call it, the kind of optional engagement and buff all your dudes and draw cards and do cool stuff. Like, that's a very well-established Hobbit archetype now, and Pippin could have established another one, and I think they were trying to do that, but honestly, his ability is just... Yeah, I don't know what to say about his ability, because the only decks that I could think of where returning guys to the staging area would be good would involve non-Hobbit heroes to take advantage of that,
exactly.
which
yep.
it doesn't work, because his ability only works when, you know, so I guess the one way you could be an apologist for Spirit Pippin would be, well, if you play two decks, and one of them has Dunhir, and one of them has Great U-Bow, and the other one has all Hobbits, I don't know. Yeah, he's a miss for me.
And even if his ability wasn't trait specific, like if you didn't have to have all Hobbit heroes, he could kind of be like a pocket light in the dark in his ability to bounce people back to the staging area. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just that specification makes it too difficult to use.
Yeah, I think the first version of the Hobbit deck, which they were trying to stress with Pippin before the Black Riders, was this idea you just ignore enemies completely and just quest like crazy, which has issues. Some quests that could be possible, but I feel like nowadays we hardly ever see quests where you can just, you know, joyfully put progress on a quest and ignore all enemies and you'll win. I don't think that happens anymore.
For anyone that wants to argue that's even doable anymore, I challenge you to go through and look at the encounter sets and look for how many orcs have an engagement cost of like 10, 12, or 15. Because even in a secrecy deck, there's always like one group within all the encounter sets of some annoying little orc scout that's going to come right at you. And when you've got a hobbit deck, even if his attack is only two or three, they're gonna seriously mess you up.
Yep.
This is one of those heroes. Let me step back a second. There's very few heroes in the game that I haven't used. Spirit Pippin is one of them, and I suspect he will remain that for the entire life of this game, unless we could maybe have some sort of mono-spirit hobbit deck, which doesn't sound appealing to me in any way, shape, or form. But I can really, that's the only way I could ever see him working. You know, you need to fill that third slot. And it is sort of a bit disadvantageous that the Black Riders came out so soon, because certainly the spirit version of Pippin was designed a long time ago, probably before Black Riders was even around, because this cycle was developed by Lucas, and Caleb is the one who developed the Black Riders. So now, not that Caleb wouldn't have known that Spirit Pippin existed, but, you know, these things get designed a long time in advance, right? And so, but they get trickled out over a period of half a year. So it's just one of those choices where he looks even worse, I think, because the lore version of Pippin came out so soon after.
Yeah, exactly. Although you could do Frodo, Fatty, and Pippin.
I suppose you could.
I've made that deck, and it's awful. Spoiler alert, that deck sucks.
Like, you saved us some time, so thanks for that.
Think of it this way. Fill a deck with mediocre abilities that raise your threat by a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... ouch.
Ian, who are you most disappointed in?
Well, I will start this off by saying I really loved the appearance of traps and rangers in this cycle. That was probably the highlight of the cycle for me. And I was really looking forward to kind of the icon of these Rangers, which is Faramir. But he ended up being a little bit disappointing for me. And not from the aspect where I think he's garbage. Like, he definitely doesn't live in the same neighborhood as Spirit Pippin. Or even Theoden. Very usable. I've used him on decks. He's worked well. But I guess for me, he just... maybe he's a victim of my expectations. I expected so much out of that character. And his effect, for some reason, didn't quite resonate with what I imagined that character to be, which is, you know, getting attack out of these enemies in the staging area. Mm-hmm. I understand the logic behind it with the traps and everything. It makes sense. It just didn't quite work for me. And his high threat kind of goes against what the Ranger trap deck is about. So I'd like to see something in the future that lowers his threat in some way. But Faramir was disappointing.
Yeah, I totally agree. He's one that I was super excited to try out. I thought his ability seemed super cool. But in practice, and again, full disclosure, maybe I'm a horrible lore deck builder or a horrible deck builder in general, but I couldn't really get him to work. Really, the only times I got him to shine was during battle questing. And multiplayer games, because you might be revealing a bunch of enemies and all of a sudden, you know, his questing points go up because they just add to it. But as far as getting traps to work or high threat or whatever, you know, it was just cool idea. I thought it might work out really well, but it ends up, you know, I thought it fell pretty flat.
The one thing that I will say, and I've got the deck up on my blog if anyone wants to take a look at it, is I finally got him to work, and it was in the mono lore deck for Gondor for this whole, you know, episode, and the deck actually works pretty well. So I'm actually coming around, because I was in the same camp as you guys, but my heroes are Faramir, Merlond, and Pippin, so obviously it's not thematically Gondorian in that sense, but Pippin's ability actually works really well with his, even though I only had one hobbit, because you know, raising the engagement of enemies and then using various events to, you know, to also, you know, like take no notice and whatnot. Yeah. And if you want to, you can do advance warning. It's like basically just lots of different shenanigans to either raise their engagement or make them not make engagement checks. And then all of a sudden Faramir starts to look pretty good. But again, I had to splash in Song of Battle and do Great U-Bow. So it really takes serious effort to make him work.
Yeah. Any closing thoughts on the Against the Shadow cycle? Any summaries before we wrap this one up?
So the one thing that I would say, we've you know, kind of criticized Gondor, and rightly so, but there are some really good cards that came out of this cycle, and I can only see those cards getting better going forward. Cards like, you know, Gondorian Shield, and even little kind of glue cards like Envoy of Pelargir. I find myself putting that ally in almost all my decks because it's just so useful. So don't take the criticism of this episode as, you know, a total damnation of the entire cycle. I think there were some really good cards that came out of it.
Yeah, overall, I really enjoyed the cycle. I thought the quests overall, in my opinion, I really enjoyed the quests for the most part, and I thought they were better than the player cards. For me, I kind of feel like this cycle is like the second book or second movie of a trilogy, and it's hard to fully criticize it because it just seems like it's setting up stuff for the future. Yeah. And so I think the final verdict is going to come later.
Yeah, I would say that I think the thematic sort of story narrative aspect of the quest was kind of neat. And I agree with you, Ian. I think the quests are far superior to the player cards, but I'm going to be harsh. I'll say thanks for Baragond and thanks for Gondorian Shield, and I'll see ya, you know, Ringmaker cycle. So, I mean, yes, I mean, every cycle has one or two cards that are good, but honestly, when I look at the decks that I make, I have one or two or three cards from this cycle. I can't see myself using much more than that. At this point in the game, of course, it is a living card game, and cards that we didn't think were good will become good, but yeah, there's always going to be one or two good cards, but to me, that's almost it. My decks are still primarily pre-Against the Shadow, you know, cycle staples, and so...
I suspect this is because you are an admitted tactics player, though, Matthew. That's one thing I would add.
Well, it could be, but, you know, I can still evaluate cards in a general sense, and, you know, I'm just not that impressed. Like I said, it's my least favorite of the three, but I have high hopes for the very first Caleb and Matt designed cycle, which is, you know, the Ringmaker and the Voice of Isengard, so I'm really hoping that will, I don't know, perk me up a little bit so I can be more positive on future episodes.
Well, I'll say I've thoroughly enjoyed the cycle. This is the only cycle that I've been a part of from the beginning. Getting into the game kind of last year, I came in at the middle of the Dwyer Elf cycle, so I've enjoyed being able to see the evolution of a cycle as it's being released, and I've enjoyed all of the quests very much, and I like most of the cards. And again, some of that is because I can apologize for them from a thematic perspective and see how they're cool, even if they're not all that playable. So I've enjoyed it, but like Matthew, I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen with the Ringmaker cycle as well. So Dan, why don't we wrap this one up, and Dan, you can tell the people where to find us online.
Yeah, so the usual places, we're on Facebook, Grey Company Podcast. You can reach us by email, thegreycompanypodcast@gmail.com. We've obviously got the WordPress blog, and we look forward to any last minute submissions on the trader card, and everyone have a great 2014. Our next episode, we're going to be talking about Nightmare decks.
Happy New Year!
Happy 2014.